This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
If a bee could talk, what do you think a bee would say about all this?
Well, I think our bees, they're very happy bees. I think they're a bit like the West Australian public, where we've got a very, you know, summer most of the year. There's lots of flowers about. It's beautiful blue skies.
And it'll be like, thank you for creating this buzz.
Very good, Rick.
Long hot days in the shade of some big old tree. Making daisy chains and watching all the honeybees.
Hey up, Jane, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm very excited because we've got some lovely guests today from Australian Rare that Nicola Bradbeer suggested we have on the podcast. Ooh. And they are Natalie Busso and Rick Baines.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Esther.
Hi, guys.
Natalie's actually in Australia, so she might be ready for bed now, but hopefully she'll stay awake for the podcast and then she'll have a nice cup of tea at the end.
Hello, Natalie.
Hello. Lovely to meet you. I had a little bit of honey just to give me an energy boost before I jumped on here, so I should be fine.
Oh, very good idea. And Rick, where are you?
I'm not in Australia. I'm in London. Ooh. I've had a little bit of honey in the morning, so I'm okay. I'm ready to go.
Okay, great. So, Natalie, can you tell us your story and how you created Australian Rare?
So, for me, honey was a revelation about 4 or 5 years ago. I actually had no idea that honey can be antibiotic. And I also didn't have any idea that the place I'm from in the west of Australia actually produces the cleanest honey in the world. So this is because we don't have pests that exist in other locations where people need to put chemicals on their hives. We don't have to do any of that. And we produce our honey off these beautiful native bushland that are hundreds of years old to produce this amazing honey. I was absolutely blown away and went, people need to know about this. And yeah, it just really started an amazing journey.
Can you just tell me why this area is free of pests?
So Western Australia is exceptionally isolated. So we joke about the fact that, you know, our nearest sort of cities are 5-8 hour flights away. So isolation has a lot of disadvantages, but then it has some pretty good advantages in terms of meaning that we're able to protect this beautiful biodiversity hotspot. And our government works with us to make sure we don't bring honey and diseases and things into this location so that we can protect it. So everyone in the world can still experience what totally clean, chemical-free honey tastes like.
So we did hear that this honey that your beekeepers are producing is £750.
A jar.
It's a bargain. A bargain.
It really is.
Can you explain that a little bit more? I know that you sell to Harrods and that your company, when did you set up your company?
So we're very, very new. We recently launched our first honey collection into Harrods. So the first year of our product range. And something that's really unique about what we're doing is that we actually work with over 40 beekeepers. We then went through a process and got that down to 5 who had the organic practices that were ethos aligned to ours, had the best locations for their hives in the state, and then got their honey and then did lab testing and sommelier testing to choose the final honeys. So we could actually say this truly is the best honey in the world through that process. We have a jar of honey. The trees that produce this honey are over 300 years old. That's antibacterial, antifungal, low GI. So for people who are diabetic, it's a great honey for them. We have a Dwata honey, which is still quite high in its antibacterial properties, has a beautiful kind of strong taste to it. And finally, our Carrie honey. This is probably my personal favourite. The Carrie trees that produce this honey is from the place I grew up in the country. And these trees are like 90 metres tall. They're absolutely stunning, just off the coast. And this tree only flowers once every 7 to 10 years.
Can you tell us a bit more about the biodiversity of the area where this honey comes from?
Yeah, so all of these honeys come from a region called the Southern Australia Biodiversity Hotspot. But this area, it's home to around 12,000, I think, species of native wildflowers, and 75% of those don't exist anywhere else on Earth.
Amazing.
Can you name some of the flowers that we will never have heard of that grow in this region?
There's a raft of different eucalypts. There's like orchids, so like a donkey orchid, and all these. Our wildflower season is quite unreal. About 3 years ago, we had this bloom that was sensational. There were these wildflowers that enthusiasts hadn't seen in like 15 years. And, you know, everyone's out there foraging on weekends looking for these beautiful wildflowers because the combination of the temperature and the rains had just been just right for these beautiful flowers to come out.
Oh, wonderful. Can you explain something about the gifting element of this honey?
What Rick and I were really trying to do was to get people to reimagine gifting. So for many years, it's been, you know, you give a beautiful bottle of wine or a champagne, and we felt there was this real place in the market for beautiful gifts that are actually good for our body. So, you know, to give a gift, you're giving someone well wishes, and to give someone alcohol, it doesn't really fit together so well, where we know the health impacts of alcohol. It's a gift that you can enjoy with your family. So we then put packaging around the fantastic honey that we have inside the jar. So 22 karat gold on the writing, the letters matching wood style to the honey. We have a honey dipper that comes with it that each hand made. The Melting Pot Studio in Margaret River is where it started. And it's actually a British artisan who makes them. He emigrated back to the UK halfway through making all of our dippers. So he's continued to make them for us in the UK. So it's truly an Australian-British endeavour. And so, yeah, we really are proud of the product we've produced. I feel like I've talked too much. Rick?
I feel like I'm a little bit outnumbered here. I'm outnumbered.
Yes, talk, Rick.
So this is the gift that you can give to someone, not making any assumptions and saying, here you go. This is the rarest, the best honey in the world of 2023. And hand on heart, we know this with all the experts we have on board, with the scientific testing that we've done. We've gone that extra mile. We are one of the early companies in the world that's actually selling honey, but have done such extensive testing. And one of the sort of the key tests, which Natalie and I are very proud of, is the palynology testing, which we've done. And Natalie's so good at explaining this. So Natalie, I want to pass it back to you.
Is that the famous Ken Dodd that does this for you?
Oh.
So
with his tickling.
He's good fun. He's good fun.
I wondered what had happened to Ken Dodd. I wondered where he's gone.
I know. He's gone to...
Did you notice? I didn't say the name. I just said scientist just because I knew this was going to come out.
So as the Australian, I have been informed that there is a well-known Ken Dodds in the world. That our Ken Dodds, who's our chief scientific advisor, is not the same Ken Dodds, but hey, we could start a conspiracy theory. I'm all for that.
We were wondering whether this our old Ken Dodd had so much of your lovely honey that it brought him back to life.
He's also become plural as well.
Yeah, so many of them now because he's eaten all that delicious medicinal honey. Yeah.
Hey, you know, raising people from the dead, maybe that could be our, you know, future
that'll
slogan.
Get the headlines. Let's get the headlines going. Yeah.
That could be another property of this honey if you got slathered in it. But anyway, we're not going to do that slathering, are we, Jane?
We're not.
Not with £750 honey. Anyway, sorry about that, Natalie.
So the palynology we do, it's actually Dr. Lynn Milne, and she's one of a few people on the planet who actually does this testing, so much so they don't let her retire. I'm like, no, Lynn, you're not allowed to retire. We need you for our honey still. But what she does is she takes a sample of our honey and puts it under a really powerful microscope. It's around 100 times magnification that they look at the honey. And what she does is she actually looks at all of the different pollen. So at Kew Gardens, you've got, you know, the beautiful collection of all of the different flowers and pollens. In Western Australia, we have a similar, it's actually tied with them, where we collect all of the different pollens of all of the different native flowers here. And so she sits there and she matches the pollen of the reference sample to the pollens she's seeing under that microscope and counts the different types of pollens to give us an analysis of how pure our natural honey is. Because we're not in like a farmed location like Manuka where they put, you know, plantations of trees just to produce one style of honey. These are native forests that are hundreds of years old. But the beekeepers know it's going to be a certain honey because of the flow. So they chase the flowers at the different times of year. But we get that verified by Lynn, who goes in and goes, yes, that is an 84% pure Jarrah honey, and it's got 16% Marri and 3% this and 2% that. And so, yeah, it's a really fabulous, amazing thing. And one of the really fascinating things that, like, Lynn, you know, tells me these amazing stories is she's actually employed by the police sometimes because she can, in a honey and then in other environments, go, oh, that shouldn't be there. There's too much pollen in this. That doesn't look natural. That's been adulterated. So her skill set is amazing, not only in being able to identify, but also go, oh, no, that doesn't look right. That rating is too high. Naturally, there wouldn't be this much pollen in a, you know, natural environment. So, yeah, some amazing scientists on the team, which makes my job an amazing one. Can hardly call it a job to get to work with these fantastic people.
We forgot to ask what actually Ken Dodds does, apart from his tickling, pickling stick.
It is fascinating. Please tell
we
us.
We love the science.
I've become a little bit of a nerd in honey. So Ken's background is actually in chemistry. So he ran the West Australian Chem Centre, which is our primary lab in Western Australia, for 32 years and recently left that role. So we grabbed him and went, come and be a consultant to us and help make sure that we are making the best decisions from a scientific point of view. Ken kind of takes what we get from Lynn, as well as our ORAC tests and our FRAP tests, which are both antioxidants tests we do, as well as total activity, which is the antibacterial tests, and then all, a raft of other tests we do about the microbiology of the honey, the sugars, etc., to help us choose what's the best honey from a purely scientific point of view. And then we have Jess Locanini look at the honeys from a taste point of view, so from the sommelier's point of view, and we bring those two things together, along with obviously the practices side, which I talked about, of selecting which beekeepers we shortlist. So it's the ethical practices, the amazing science, and then third, taste, to come up with what is the best honey in the world.
They do. Not golden, though, Jane. Not golden spoons, but they look better than a lot of the spoons we've had over the years. Rick, because it is a few weeks ago since we came to taste the honey, can you remind us, Rick, of our favourites?
So, Esther. Esther went with the Dwatta honey.
And this is the Dwatta.
Which is our coastal black butt honey.
Oh, it was lovely.
There's a lot of flavour to this.
This is a different type of sort of sweetness. I just want to keep going in for more.
So this one...
This is a coastal honey from the black butt coastal trees, so they're called like Dwatta.
Yeah, and is this a spring or summer honey?
It's a spring.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I think this one's 69% Dwatta.
These tastes were something else, and I remember I'll even start crying now. I just thought, God, it's just amazing. The flavour of this honey was so outstanding. And although I have tasted eucalyptus honeys before and that sort of rich toffee flavour and caramel, there was just so much more complexity to anything I tasted before, and I just couldn't believe it that the bees can make this and, you know, give it to us.
Makes me want to move to Australia.
Oh, this one's the Jarrah.
Jane, you went with the Jarrah honey.
So this is our supreme, the top honey that we're selling.
So you have very expensive taste.
You can buy me a jar for Christmas, Jane.
Sure.
Each box comes with a certificate and with a little golden ring. Mm-hmm. It's very special.
Ooh. Certificate of authenticity.
That's right.
Wow.
And the actual GPS coordinates of actually where the honey's from.
Oh, right, yes.
Each honey, it's limited to 888 jars of each honey.
You can do it first. Swallow it.
This is the Jarrah.
Let go of it from your nose.
Yeah, what was your thoughts on each one?
Well, I liked, I mean, I wanted another taste of the Jarrah honey straight away. Again, just beautifully sweet. I mean, it was just so sweet.
Sort of velvety sweet.
the texture of it was just so beautiful.
You can't believe that that's honey and there's no sort of synthetic sort of addition to it, because it's sort of like golden syrup in a way. You know what, you could eat so much of it. But you can't believe that it has no additives in it and that's completely pure.
And I love golden syrup, so to find a healthy version of golden syrup was like such a find.
Oh, and now that I know that you're partial to your, like, you know, beautiful vintage cheddars, and that it's a perfect pairing. So some vintage cheddar, some, you know, honey, and then a little bit of crisp green apple. Perfection.
Mm. Mm.
So put hold your nose, move it around your mouth, but don't swallow. Mmm. Mm.
There was a strongly medicinal flavoured one.
It leaves you with like
that. That is gorgeous.
Oh, no, that is amazing.
And these trees, these kauri trees, grow up to about 90 metres. Mm. And it's very rare. This is about 1,000 times rarer than Manuka.
Oh, my God.
Our sommelier has done tasting notes for us. And it's quite a delicate honey. And you can have it with, like, soft cheeses. You can have it with figs. And it goes really well. And it doesn't sort of take you away. Mm-hmm. But this is something which tastes amazing.
Yes.
And at the same time, it's so good for you.
Yes.
Like, I've had, like, really high-strength Manuka honey in the past. And it's very, like, earthy and, you know, I don't really enjoy this. Whereas, for example, our Jarrah is the equivalent of a 2000 MGO Manuka. Mm-hmm. It's got the same medicinal strength, but it tastes amazing.
Mm.
This with the Jarrah honey, it's actually relatively high in fructose to glucose and in a small amount of sucrose. And what that does is mean that because it's more fructose based, and relatively less glucose, it doesn't spike the blood sugars as much. So as I said, for people who want something sweet, who are worried about spiking their blood sugars, it makes it a very good honey for them.
So you could actually consume this, and you could actually have a teaspoon of this every day if you wanted to. So it's
Or two teaspoons. Or even like five.
Not at that price, Esther.
Yeah, but if you were super rich and you had that,
yes,
you would.
Yeah.
You could have as many as you want.
Or you had very rich friends who were going to gift it to you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't pour this onto my cereal.
No, just pour it down your throat, wouldn't you?
Yeah, all in one go.
It'll have to be a special dinner party.
I think I literally would be able to eat the whole jar.
Yeah, I would.
I mean, I was going to ask about the other beekeepers in the region. How much are they selling their honey for?
So their honey doesn't come at the same premium as this, but again, doesn't go through the same scientific rigour. So we've got honeys that we've done all of this testing and then we rejected them because they didn't make it to the final jars. So there's only 888 honeys in the batch. And so obviously it was that batch that was lab tested and then that batch goes in to the honey. It's not, oh, okay, a week later we took some more hives off and we had more honey and we're just going to whack that in there. No, that batch went through all of its scientific testing and it's only that batch that goes into our jars.
But do you think in the region, the other beekeepers, their price has gone up as a result of Australian Rare?
I really hope that happens in the future. I think we're still so early on and I want people to recognise this. And for me, you know, at the bottom of my heart is going, by having honey and by having this amazing product, it is the story of bees, but it's also the story of flowers and our environment and why we need to protect it. Because, as I said, 300-year-old trees that only flower once every 7 to 10 years, when those trees are gone, you can't get that honey back, or you can wait 300 years and you can maybe get that honey back again. And when I say sort of 300 years with the Jarrah tree, that tree takes 120 years to reach maturity. It's really not until 120 years that it starts producing its best honey, because a tree, like a human, when it's growing, it's putting all of its energy into itself, making its trunk big and strong, rather than putting that out in its nectar and pollen to be able to create more trees. So in terms of the nutritional benefit of the honey, that nutritional benefit goes up significantly because it's the combination of the nectar and, you know, a little bit of the pollen that comes in.
Sure, yes.
And I've got a question, Natalie. Is that, and Rick, of course. So, because I'm a beekeeper and I was thinking if I was one of your beekeepers, you know, and these beekeepers have been in these areas for years. I mean, people have collected honey forever. that honey has been important in their communities and for their well-being. We've been hearing from people like Nicola at Bees for Development. People in Africa, they've got these special areas as well where there's an amazing biodiversity, and the people go to the local hospital and they buy one teaspoon of that honey because they really appreciate the value of it. And medicinally, they feel better when they take it. I mean, I felt great for days after I'd had your honey. But what I'm asking you is that these people in this area where you're collecting the honey, what about those beekeepers that have always shared that honey in that local area with those local people? Does nobody live there? I mean, I'm just interested in the like local communities and what they think about this project. Because, of course, you have discovered this amazing value of this honey. You know, if your company's harvesting a lot of it, then what happens to the people who've been using it forever and ever?
So the really good thing is that they're sort of grading within, you know, these honeys, and we do produce, you know, it's still exceptionally rare, but Western Australia is a very small population and we are surrounded by a lot of forest. So there's honey there. And like me, when I speak to the beekeepers, they're really excited because they're excited that we're actually talking to the world about our honey.
Yeah.
Being a bit isolated, you know, everyone talks about Sydney and Melbourne and the east coast of Australia, but very few people come to the west coast of Australia. So it's a little bit of a unknown, off the beaten track for most people. And these come from the down in the southwest. If you're into your wine, the Margaret River wine region, it's a beautiful part of the world. And so we are able to sort of produce honey, and you know, there are people who, you know, swear by their jarra honey and, you know, come and get their jarra honey.
Yeah.
I actually run another honey store, and so we do supply people with, you know, jarra honey for wounds. We've got lots of singers and things like that who, you know, swear by will only have, say, jarra honey for their throats and to, you know, make sure that they keep themselves in tip-top condition.
And I think from our side, you know, the mission that Natalie and I are also on, it's also to educate the world about this amazing honey.
Mm.
You know, southwestern Australia is, I would say, the epicenter of honey. You know, if you want good champagne, you go to the Champagne region. If you want the great whiskey, you go to Scotland. And if you want the best honey in the world, it's from southwest Australia.
Yeah.
And so I think Manuka, you know, New Zealand, they've done an amazing job. And in terms of marketing Manuka, I think we're here now, and, you know, the mission and what we're really passionate about, because this is a real passion project for Natalie and I, is that we want to showcase this amazing honey, which I don't think anybody else in the world knows about. And when Natalie and I first start talking about this, maybe about 2.5 years ago, and the first thing that came to me was like, why are you hiding this from the world? So like, Natalie, this is not fair. The world should know about this honey and that this exists.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, a lot of honeys have got this property and makes it good for people who are diabetic as well. Even my London honey, Jane. I'm not comparing it to your jarra honey, of course. But I think the conversation that we're having is really, again, bringing us back to, with all this research, because unfortunately a lot of honeys haven't had this research. And, you know, I really appreciate these really old trees, and they're part of this amazing biodiversity, which is so special in this part of Australia. But, you know, even thinking about other countries, places where we're yet to develop and test these honeys, but local communities know how valuable they are. And I think this discussion is, again, bringing us to think about what is the value of honey, and is honey sold too cheaply? And I think by giving this sort of gift at a very, very high price, it really starts a conversation of that.
Yes, exactly. I never buy squeezy honey now from the supermarket, because that is just, and we've talked about that, that should just be labelled as sugar, shouldn't it, rather than honey.
Yep.
It has no resemblance to honey at all.
Yeah, and it's, for me, I can't agree with you more, Esther, in terms of, I think Australia, like the UK, we lost, I think, a bit of a generation in food education, where marketing of brands kind of took over in teaching us about food and really understanding the importance of raw and whole foods in our diet for our overall health. And this is a real opportunity for us to kind of step back and go, okay, wow, honey is this amazing product that how it actually interacts with our body isn't the same as just, you know, sugars and this and that in a lab. But I just want people to think about what they put in their body and natural raw products that for centuries we've talked about how honey is fantastic for us. There's some knowledge there. And the science is slowly catching up. But as you said, it's very slow because a honey that you get in London is different to a honey in Australia. And then there's variation within the year and the age of the trees. And it's nature. So there's so many variables. Put that in our cellar and open it in 150 years and go, oh, I'm tasting an environment that doesn't exist anymore because those trees are gone.
So do you think that's what people are doing with this honey, putting it away like they do with a wine?
I expect that some people who are savvy will do that because it really is a litmus of time. So, and with only 888 jars produced, yeah, I think that would be a very wise thing to do.
And then it would go up in value and it doesn't crystallise.
And exactly. It's not a truffle, is it? So it wouldn't, like, if you put a truffle in the cupboard for a long time, you'd be really, well, you'd smell out the whole house, wouldn't you? Mm.
Unless you put the truffle in the honey. If you put the truffle in the honey, maybe you might be okay.
Well, that's for the flavour, though, that amazing flavour. Although at first, I must admit, I was like, flipping heck. I wrote an email back to Nicola saying, flipping heck, 750 quid, come on. But for me, obviously, I wouldn't be able to afford that. And I have tasted Australian honeys before, and I already thought to myself, the best honeys I've ever tasted are Australian honeys. But I just think that, like I said, just heightening this conversation in a way, you may as well sell it for £2,000 a jar, because then you could get an even bigger story. You could probably still sell it to the same people. And then you maybe even get onto the 10 o'clock news, and you sort of shake everybody and be like, God, and then people might listen. Mm.
Maybe I'll put that out there. We'll just go for double.
Yes, you're selling it for too cheap.
It's just too cheap.
Yes, exactly. Not messing about with that honey. But do you think the people who are buying this honey, obviously who can afford to buy, to spend £750 on a jar of honey, I mean, I'm not talking about everybody, but do you think the majority of them really appreciate this honey, or is it because a lot of the time they can buy it?
I think when they understand the story, when they understand the science, plus all the sommelier notes which we've put together, we've, in a way, this is, from what Natalie and I have done, this is the new fine wine as we see it. And, you know, we truly believe these are going to be collector's items as well. So there is going to be people who are going to think, I've got a jar of the 2023 Kerry. We cannot get hold of another Kerry batch again, but I have got this in my cupboard. And then when we come out with our 2024 collection, there'll be some real special editions on that year as well. So they will be collectors, and they'll be similar to how the fine wine collections go at the moment. And possibly, you know, with the education piece we're doing, everyone in the industry will benefit from this work that we started now.
Yeah, that's what's important.
I would just love every household in the UK and every household in Australia, just to hear that message of going, you can go down to your farmer's market and you can buy a honey and it is going to be infinitely better for your body because that honey hasn't been ultra filtered. It hasn't been heat treated. And so it's full of proteins and enzymes and things that are fantastic for your body.
Brilliant.
I taste my own honey, and London honey is pretty impressive. You know, it's a great honey, but obviously nothing like your honey. Sorry, bees. I love you anyway. You're great. Well, thank you. It was lovely.
It was wonderful. So informative. And to have also tasted your lovely honeys. Just what a privilege.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, bye.
Take care. See you soon.
Bye. And I'll call you
up whenever I'm feeling down. Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton and John Wakefield. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy Mae Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from the hive. Queen Bees is a Hat Trick podcast.
Yeah, feels so good just to have you around.
I chose Stick of the Dump by Clive King.
I've chosen Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
I have chosen the book When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit.
I have chosen My Friend Flicker.
Danny, Champion of the World.
The Seven Crystal Balls.
The Iron Man.
Claudine at St. Clair's.
The Guinness Book of Records.
I chose Ballyshoes.
And then I came across in the school library a copy of Treasure Island. I was terrified.
I'm Janet Ellis, and each week I invite a guest to come and chat with me about their favourite childhood book. They often bring along their own battered copy.
It's not at all as I remember it.
This is a celebration of reading.
I ended up reading it to my mum at home every night.
Because who doesn't still secretly check under the bed for monsters?
I knew that it was true.
Harbour secret desires to run off to the circus.
Riding like the wind into the purple hills. It really captured my imagination.
Twice Upon a Time. Follow us on Instagram at @TwiceUponPod for updates and guest news.
I want to read this book again and again and again and again and again.
Twice Upon a Time is a Hat Trick podcast.